This month at Debt Free Mom is all about feeding our families. I make a point of talking about food and food spending all throughout the year, but I like to take 1 month per year, really dive into what it means to feed the family, to follow a budget, to break free from our assumptions of when we're supposed to eat out, what kind of food we're supposed to make for meals, and instead do what is best for our family. This month is really fun for me because it's a lot of mom math, it's a lot of groceries, it's a lot of home-cooked meals, and so I want to start off the podcast series for this month talking about the phrase, nothing bad will happen. Now, this phrase, I think, is helpful in every aspect of life. Learning to be resilient and flexible serves us well, whether we're talking about food or careers or budgets or relationships. Being willing to try something we've never done before and be flexible with how we respond to whatever the outcome happens to be serves us well. But I tend to use this phrase when it comes to cooking in the kitchen. Nothing bad will happen. The reason I think it's so helpful specifically around putting food together is that so often the food that we are making has been recommended to us by a recipe. So we're looking on Pinterest, we're looking on Instagram, we're looking in a cookbook, and it's telling us exactly how much to put of each food, exactly what temperature to cook something, and it makes sense. It makes sense that a recipe is written that way. But in reality, that's not how successful cooking happens. If you roast vegetables at 375 instead of 350, they will not really turn out that differently. There's actually a lot of freedom and flexibility inside of cooking that will allow you to find the food that you like, the flavors you like, and the methods and time commitment that fit into your schedule. So first, let's talk about our meal planning and what we would define as dinner when we're coming up with what we're gonna buy at the grocery store and eat during the week. When it comes to meal planning, nothing bad will happen if your meal looks nothing like someone else's. Nothing bad will happen if one of the dinners you plan for is a frozen dinner. Nothing bad will happen if one of the dinners doesn't have a vegetable. Nothing bad will happen if you want to make something that's spicy that you enjoy, and so you make something different for the kids. Giving yourself permission to do what works for your schedule and energy level and budget, apart from what other people think you should do or what you see someone else making, can give you the freedom to ask the right questions, to ask, what do I have time for this week? What do we have going on that will require my energy during dinner time? What budget do we have this week? Did I need to reduce our food spending because we had an unexpected expense? Can I temporarily adjust what I normally buy to buying something else? Having this nothing bad will happen flexibility approach to what our meals look like can set the stage for then applying that same principle to our grocery purchases and to our cooking. So let's talk about finding recipes. Cooking off of a recipe comes and goes for me. When I first started learning how to cook after we got married in my early 20s, I followed recipes to a T. And that's so normal. I mean, that's how you learn. I firmly believed that if a recipe said I needed this specific spice and this specific condiment, that I needed to go to multiple grocery stores until I found those things, and that that would be the only way to make that recipe work. Now, as time went on, I started to find that some recipes that I was following to a T did not taste good to me, or were undersalted, or baked way longer than what the recipe said. So I started to wonder, what's the difference between what this recipe says will be successful and what I am actually finding will be successful? Well, lo and behold, even though it should have been obvious to me, salts are different, ovens are different, taste preferences are different, and different speeds of chopping and prepping and all of those things are all different. So when a recipe says that something will cook at exactly 375 or need exactly 2 teaspoons of salt, that's what worked for them, but it may not work for me. When I stopped believing that if something didn't taste good, it was because I had done something wrong, and started believing that it was because the recipe was different than what I wanted it to be, it opened up a whole new world of cooking for me. Just yesterday on Instagram, I mentioned something joking about a cookbook that I would write called Nothing Bad Will Happen, and it'll be dump some salt, taste again, dump some more, cook until you smell the food. These kind of arbitrary instructions for how to make food. And someone messaged me and said, I could never follow a cookbook like that. I need exact measurements on how to salt something. I need to know exactly what I need to put in. And I responded her and said, it sounds backwards, but having exact measurements given to you by someone else is actually what's making you not able to do the salting yourself. Because you're looking at a recipe and saying, okay, exactly 2 teaspoons of salt is how this recipe will taste good. And then if you don't like the outcome, you're just thinking, I don't like that recipe overall. Like, this is a bad recipe. I'm not going to cook that again. If we can instead start to be analytical, critical thinkers about our food, and when we taste something, close our eyes and ask ourselves, does this taste too salty? Does it taste not salty enough? Is the texture a little off? Could it have used a little longer in the oven? When we start asking these little questions of ourselves, we will become more proficient, confident cooks. We will start to deviate from the recipe when it just isn't what works for us. So approaching a very basic dish, like a roasted vegetable, and tasting it and asking ourselves, what does it need more of? What does it need less of? How can I change it to improve it? Asking ourselves those little tweaking questions is precisely how we get away from feeling like we need exact measurements in order to be successful. When it comes to ingredients, swapping and omitting ingredients is one of the best ways to not only save money, but also save time and make food taste the way that you want them to taste. So my classic example for this is that there is a chili recipe from 40 Aprons. I found it when I was doing Whole30 way back in 2019. It is a butternut squash chili recipe. It has no beans in it. It uses a couple different kinds of meat. The recipe calls for fish sauce. Now, first of all, I know what fish sauce tastes like and I don't like it. Second of all, I have no other recipe that I would use fish sauce for. I have nothing else that I'm making that I would use that one ingredient for, which means it would take up space in my budget and in my small refrigerator for this one recipe that I occasionally make. Google is your best friend when it comes to omitting or swapping ingredients. So way back when I started making this recipe, I Googled alternatives to fish sauce. It has a very salty, umami type flavor, and I now substitute either soy sauce or Worcestershire sauce in place of the fish sauce. This is the only way I've made it. Maybe the fish sauce tastes great, but I absolutely love this recipe. It's a fan favorite. I usually make it when someone needs a meal because it's easy to reheat. It's gluten-free and dairy-free, so it's very easy to give to someone even if they have a dietary specification, and I absolutely love it. It also allows me to use ingredients that I already have that have multiple purposes instead of buying something that I only use for this one recipe. Truly, nothing bad happened and everything great happened by making that recipe, but adapting it to what I have available and what I want to buy. So I very regularly Google, what can I use instead of blank if I'm either out of something or I couldn't find it in the store or I just don't like that flavor or don't want to spend that much on something. Another one I can think of is a salad dressing recipe, a pinch of yum kale peanut crunch salad. And in the recipe, she does a homemade salad dressing and she uses peanut oil. I have looked at 3 different grocery stores in my town and have not found this roasted peanut oil that she talks about in the recipe. Instead of abandoning the recipe altogether, I just thought, okay, well, peanut oil is the oil from peanuts. Can I use a tasteless oil, like a light olive oil, and then food process it with actual peanuts and get virtually the same flavor? And yes, I absolutely can. And that's now what I do. So when I make that recipe, it already calls for food processing the salad dressing altogether. So instead of using this peanut oil that she calls for, I'm just putting light flavored oil and peanuts in the food processor with the other things like the vinegar and the honey and the salt, and food processing them together, and then straining them through a fine mesh strainer for any of those bigger peanut pieces. And then lo and behold, I have a peanut salad dressing that I'm sure tastes almost exactly like what she makes. And it costs me no extra because I have peanuts and I have oil, even though I don't live in an area where I have access to things like Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or specialty grocery stores. I can still make these recipes and enjoy them. So taking an approach to the ingredient list that says I can be creative with what I actually use and just see this recipe as a starting point. It's a jumping off point to give me a general reference for what's inside of this recipe, but I can change what's listed here and still enjoy the food. Nothing bad happened and everything good happened because I love that salad. I love the cabbage and kale and peppers and then putting crunchy peanuts and the salad dressing on top, and I get to enjoy it even though the ingredient list is not the same as what I actually use. I find that the more ingredients a recipe has, the more flexibility you will have with omitting or swapping things. So take that chili, for example. Because there are all kinds of veggies and oils and two different kinds of meat and a whole laundry list of spices, omitting or swapping one item in that long list of ingredients is not really going to change the overall flavor of the food. So next time you are interested in a recipe, whether you see it on a cookbook or Instagram or Pinterest, and you notice several ingredients on the list that you would have to buy specifically for that one recipe, and you're not sure what else you would use that for, Google, what could I use instead of fill in the blank on that ingredient, and just scan the list. It's going to give you all kinds of ideas. That's where I learned about flax seed eggs. If you are baking and you need an egg and you don't have an egg or the egg is too expensive, you can put 1 tablespoon of ground flaxseed in 3 tablespoons of water, let it sit on the counter for 5 to 10 minutes so that the flaxseed absorbs the water, and it has a similar consistency and fat content to an egg and will bake into your baked good very similarly to an egg. I had absolutely no idea that that was a thing. Honestly, when I Googled it, I was skeptical that it would work, but I went ahead and tried it because I didn't have an egg, and it works. So being willing to take a nothing bad will happen approach, in that scenario, the worst thing that could possibly happen would be that a batch of muffins turned out less than stellar. On the whole, in the grand scheme of life and feeding people, that's not a big deal. So that was the risk. The risk is that I have a batch of muffins that doesn't taste great. The upside or the reward for being willing to try something marginally risky in the kitchen is that I now have more tools in my tool belt to use when I'm out of something or can't find something or forgot something or it's just too expensive. This nothing bad will happen approach also compounds in your skills and your habits. If you're willing to do that once and then do it again, the more consistently you are willing to say, I wonder what would happen if I did this instead, the easier it will become, the more natural it will become to you to look at a recipe and immediately weed out what you don't want to buy or don't want to do and replace it with something that you would prefer. So if you're currently a by-the-book recipe follower, you don't deviate, if you have something on the ingredient list that's not in your pantry, you're running out to the store to buy one specific thing, I want to challenge you to find a low-risk way to take on this nothing bad will happen approach. Next time you find yourself in that position, pause before you run to the store to buy one thing, which that trip to the store to buy one thing might cascade into grabbing 10 things and then suddenly you're over budget. Just see what Google offers you. See if you have any of the things that it lists. I also want you to ask yourself, how central is this ingredient to the overall dish? Could I leave out fresh basil and use dried basil instead? Could I use whole milk instead of half and half? It'll be a little more watery, a little less fatty, creamy, but it's not going to ruin the dish, especially again when you're talking about something like a soup, a casserole, where lots of ingredients are all mixed together. If you take just 2 or 3 extra minutes to approach this recipe problem in a different way than you have been, you might be surprised at what you're able to do, what kind of meal you're able to put together with what you already have compared to needing to buy something more. Now, I want to talk about those last couple days at the end of the week before you're grocery shopping again, especially if it's before the end of a pay period, where the pantry staples, the things that you're used to having for breakfast for the kids or to pack in their lunches, they're not there. It can be easy to believe that we have to run out to the store and whether our budget says that we have the margin or not, get these things because it's what we're used to. Again, I want you to pause and take a nothing bad will happen approach. I've been known to pack school lunches for the kids that didn't have a single produce item in them because it was the last day of the week and I just didn't have one. And the way my brain works, I don't generally think ahead very well. And so sometimes I don't even realize that we don't have produce until 7:45 a.m. as I'm packing the lunches in the moment. And I don't have much of a choice either way. Nothing bad will happen. I have posted about this before on Instagram about nothing is going to happen to your child if they have one meal where you didn't offer them a fresh piece of produce. And I cannot tell you how many registered dietitians will send me a message and say, yes, absolutely. If they have a dinner where it is a meat and potatoes kind of dinner and you ran out of fresh produce and tomorrow you're going grocery shopping and you're going to get some apples, nothing bad will happen. So resist that urge to put all of your proverbial eggs in one basket and say that every single meal has to have all of these components, otherwise I'm not doing something well. If you zoom out and look at your week on the whole and your kids throughout the week are eating vegetables, they're eating fruit, they had these nice cooked lean proteins like chicken, they had turkey burgers, you had spaghetti, and then you have a random Friday night where dinner is a charcuterie board of leftover crackers and cheese and popcorn and lemonade, nothing bad will happen. So the next time you're faced with preparing food for yourself or other people, have this mantra in your mind of nothing bad will happen. If the recipe calls for ground chicken and I have ground turkey, nothing bad will happen. If the recipe calls for beef broth and I have veggie broth, nothing bad will happen. If the recipe calls for a tablespoon of chili powder and I have 3/4 of a tablespoon, nothing bad will happen. The more we're willing to see what someone thinks we should do, whether it's an Instagram post or a recipe, and be able to ask ourselves, what should I actually do? What do I actually want to do? The more confident we will become, because we are seeing these suggestions as just that, a suggestion for what we could do, not what we have to do. So nothing bad will happen. And in fact, I think a lot of good things will happen if you're willing to start asking those questions. What could I do instead? What do I actually prefer? And what do I have the capacity for, both in my schedule, in my energy, and in my money? So as we kick off this Feed the Family month, remember that nothing bad will happen if you don't do exactly what someone else or some other recipe thinks that you should do. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and join me over on Instagram at debtfree.mom for all conversations about feeding our family realistically.
Thanks for listening to the Debt Free Mom podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt Free Mom podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. Oh, oh.